verse number 36, but if you say a few words about her. Thank you, Mataji.
Sure, Mataji. Thank you so much. Okay, so today, our speaker for today is Her Grace Preeti Vilasini Mataji. She's a very special person in the Bhakti Sangha Japa group. This is a very brief introduction on some of Mataji's services. So Her Grace Preeti Vilasini Mataji did her chemical engineering from Ramaya Institute of Technology in Bangalore. She did her master's in Anna University and later studied environmental engineering at the University of Houston. She got married to a wonderful Vaishnava, His Grace Srinivas Jagannath Prabhu, and after getting introduced to Krishna consciousness around 2009, she took initiation from His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj in 2015. She is an exemplary devotee, a great scholar, and has in-depth knowledge of the Shastras, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam. She loves Srimad Bhagavatam a lot. She is a very eloquent speaker, and the way she narrates various stories from the scriptures feels just like a grandma narrating pastimes. She narrates them in her sweet voice with so much expression and enthusiasm that it makes the listener envision the pastime in front of their eyes. She is one of the main administrators of the Bhakti Sangha Japa Conference Group. This is a virtual temple for many devotees, and her dedication, her sincerity and management skills, along with her very humble attitude, is an inspiration for many devotees, and this has taken Bhakti Sangha to very great heights. She has served in many temples in Houston, in Atlanta, the Bay Area, Chicago, in various capacities, and conducts various classes in different forums and inspires many devotees in their path of Krishna consciousness. She's also a very good cook, an astrologer, and she is a very good mentor. I request Her Grace Preeti Vilasini Mataji to please be on the call. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol Indu Mataji, what a wonderful introduction. Yes, we always hear Preeti Vilasini Mataji. Mataji, please go ahead. And if you could kindly speak a few words. And so today we will be hearing from you from Canto 7, chapter number 2, verse number 36. Please, Mataji, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mataji, so you're muted. All right.
Dear devotees, you can all hear me?
Yes, Mataji.
Yes.
So we'll get started with Srimad Bhagavatam as announced at the 7 to 36. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayet nashtaprayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki krishnaya vasudevaya devaki nandanaya cha Nandakopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam 7 to 36. Tatraha Preta Bandhuna Mashrutya Paridevitam Ahatan Balako Bhutva Yamasvayam Upagataha. Tatra, there, her certainly. Preta Bandhunam, the friends and relatives of the dead king, Ashrutya, hearing, Paridevitam, the loud lamentation, so loud that it could be heard from the planet of Yamaraj. Aha said, Tan unto them, the lamenting queens, Balakaha, a boy, Bhutva, becoming Yamaha, Yamaraja, the superintendent of death, Swayam, personally, Upagataha, after coming. Translation by Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When queens were lamenting for the dead body of the king, their loud cries were heard even from the abode of Yamaraj. Assuming the body of a boy, Yamaraj personally approached the relatives of the dead body and advised them as follows. Let's read the purport by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes the living entity is forced to give up his body and enter another one according to the judgment of Yamaraj. It is difficult, however, for the conditioned soul to enter another body unless the present dead body is annihilated through cremation or some other means. The living being has attachment for the present body and does not want to enter another, and thus, in the interim, he remains a ghost. If a living being who has already left the body has been pious, Yamaraj, just to give him relief, will give him another body. Since the living being in the body of a king had some attachment to the body, he was hovering as a ghost, and therefore Yamaraj, as a special consideration, approached the lamenting relatives to instruct them personally. Yamaraj approached them as a child, because a child is not restricted but is granted admittance anywhere, even to the palace of a king. Besides this, the child was speaking philosophy. People are very much interested in hearing philosophy when it is spoken by a child. A beautiful purport by Srila Prabhupada, and we'll start off with the prayer. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripatamaham Mande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Paramananda Madhavam Krishna Chaitanyam Ishwaram Namavam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the context in which this verse appears, as you all know, since you've been hearing classes each and every day, Hiranyakashipu was pacifying his relative, especially that of Hiranyaksha, after the death of Hiranyaksha. So Hiranyaksha's wife, Rushabhanu, his mother, Diti, all of them were present there in the assembly. And he was telling them about the temporary nature of the material world and how one must not lament for the body. So we know from Bhagavad Gita, a wise person neither laments for the living nor for the dead. So while he was giving this discourse to everyone who was present there, which is this Hiranyakashipu Gita, and in one sense it is bona fide because he had heard it from scriptures and he was quoting history, but he did not have realized knowledge of what he was talking, and he did not give importance to the existence of the Supreme Lord. So during his interesting discourse, he was telling a very nice history that had happened in the past. And we saw in some verses before that this is a bona fide history. It is mentioned, and that's why Hiranyakashipu was quoting this history. So it had happened in the bygone ages. What was that story? There was a king by the name Suyagnya, and he died in the battlefield. And this Suyagnya, he had many wives, many, many wives. And on the death of their husband, they were lamenting very pitiably. They were not letting go of the body. So this verse specifically mentions that their cries were so loud that it was even heard in the abode of Yamaraj. So you can imagine how badly they were lamenting. And at that time, to give these ladies some relief and also enlighten them as their well-wisher, a small boy appeared on the scene. Okay. Now, a quick question, if anybody can unmute and answer. Generally, who comes when a person dies, to take away the body, to take away the soul from the body, who generally comes?
Yamaduta.
Correct, Yamadutta. So why did Yamaraj come here? Right? Usually it is the Yamadutas, but here it is mentioned that a small boy came and he was Yamaraj himself. So why should Yamaraj come? Huh. So was it like Thanksgiving holiday in Narakalok and all the Yamadutas were on leave, or maybe they had a strike? Nothing of that kind. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that some say that generally Yama comes personally only for pious people and he takes them to his cities when the body is burned, after the body is burned. Okay. Some others explain that among the women, there were some devotees. So he had many wives and some of them were devotees. So Yama's servants couldn't approach a person who is a devotee. So since the king's body was surrounded by some of the devotees who were wives, Yama's servants could not approach that spot. So Yamaraj himself came to take the body from them. And it was Yamaraj who took the form of a boy, because no random person can suddenly take the form of a boy and enter the scene. Right? So it must be some special personality. It must be a great Mahajan like Yamaraj who takes the form of a boy and goes and preaches to these ladies who are there. Now, why the form of a child? Because Prabhupada says, because the speaking of a child is very sweet, and when a child, a small boy or a small girl speaks high philosophy, it will be very astonishing for the people who are saying, just like when we have these different fancy dress competitions. So at that time, if adults dress up nicely and go on stage, nobody is going to look at them. But if small children, they take on roles of different characters from the Ramayana, Mahabharata or Bhagavatam, then everyone wants to look at them and see how nicely they are speaking. Right? So people get very inspired to take up the instructions when a young child is speaking. And just like how in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have the instructions given by Prahlad Maharaj, how Prahlad Maharaj was instructing his classmates, the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. When Krishna was speaking to the Vrajavasis before the Govardhan Puja, it was very attractive. Nobody cared what exactly he was speaking, but they were ready to listen to him. Again, Vamanadeva, when he appeared in the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, everyone was so attracted to his beauty. In fact, Bhagavatam says in 1328, if you read the purport, it is mentioned that Vamanadeva's special opulence that he really exhibited was his beauty. So anyone who saw him, they got captivated by his beauty. So when small children appear, they are all very sweet, and people, the relatives, especially the relatives or even normal people who are watching the small child, they are ready to listen attentively. They are very innocent. At the same time, when they speak intelligent words, it appears very nice. So all of them were ready to listen attentively, and Yamaraj specifically chose to come as a small boy. Now, Prabhupada, he explains in the purport that once this king died, Yamaraj felt compassion and he came there. So Yamaraj seemed to have some special consideration for the living entity who was departing, as well as for the wife, for the different wives who were lamenting. Sometimes the living entity is forced to give up his body and enter another one according to the judgment of Yamaraj. However, it is very, very difficult for the conditioned soul to enter another body unless the present body is annihilated through cremation or some other means. Now, these wives, they were holding on to the body. The living being who has just departed from the body has attachment to that body. He does not want to enter another body. So in the interim period, he hovers like a ghost because he is attached to that particular body. That is why it is very important to finish off the body, cremate the body, so that that attachment is gone. Second thing is lamentation. Excessive lamentation is going to attract that person to stay back, because everybody has attachments. We, as much as we have attachments for the departed also has attachment to the body and the extensions of the body. So these people were not letting the body to be cremated. This person was hovering like a ghost. So Yamaraj really thought this is a sad state. So as a special consideration, he came to the lamenting relatives so that he could instruct them personally. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also mentioned some of them were devotees, so they could easily take up to the process if they were advised correctly. Okay, so this is the theme, and let's try to see what more we can understand from this particular verse. First of all, lamentation at the time of death of a dear one. It is natural for everybody. And Srimad Bhagavatam gives various examples of how different people lamented and how they got enlightened. There is a standard understanding in this world about the grief cycle. It is said that there are five stages in a grief cycle. What are these five stages? First, denial. First, we want to deny if a dear one is departed. First of all, you don't want to believe it. You're like, no, this cannot happen. This cannot happen to my loved one. It cannot happen to me because I am going to suffer in separation from this person. Second is anger. We are automatically, as soon as we deny something, we are very angry. We don't know whom to show that anger towards. Sometimes it is towards God. Sometimes it is towards Providence. Sometimes it is towards people around us. So anger is the next step. After anger, it is bargaining. We are somehow trying to bargain with somebody who's present or with the person who has departed, please come back. Or even with God for that matter. After we stop bargaining, the next is we realize that in spite of bargaining, there is no avail. Nothing is going to change. Then we get into depression. We are very, very sad. And after a long period of depression, there is acceptance because nothing can be done. So these are all the different stages that any grieving person goes through. Now, let us take one example from Srimad Bhagavatam of a woman who had a similar situation. This was Queen Kritadyuti. So we just saw Queen Kritadyuti's story in sixth canto, and we have seen verse by verse explanation for what happened in her life. So Chitraketu and Kritadyuti, they wanted to have a son. And Chitraketu's wife Kritadyuti, they had a child after several years. You all know Chitraketu, he married lakhs of women. Nobody had a child. Everybody by chance were barren. And the Jeshta Shrestha queen, the oldest and the best queen was Kritadyuti. And sage Angira, he performed a sacrifice for them so that they could have a child. And he gave the payasam to this lady who drank it. And eventually she became pregnant. However, the Kovais, they got very envious and out of their burning envy because they were neglected by their husband and they also didn't have children, they ended up poisoning this child and the child died. So when the child died, Chitraketu and Kritadyuti, they began to lament in various ways. Actually, Kritadyuti was unable to believe it. Initially, she was unable to believe it. She went and asked her the maid to go and wake up the child, and when the maid came running and telling that the child didn't have symptoms of life, she was in disbelief and she was thinking, oh, what is this, what happened? And she started blaming Providence in anger. Second was anger, and she was showing it towards Providence. She said, oh Providence, oh creator, you are such an inexperienced person, you're acting like a kid, Balishu, you're a small child, you don't have any experience. What are you thinking you're doing? You have taken out the lifetime of a child before the father. The father is living, but the child is gone. What kind of creative laws are these? And she starts lamenting and she starts blaming Providence. But then if she says to the Lord, she starts arguing with the Lord. She says, you may say that there is no such law that a father must die in the lifetime of a son and a son cannot die before the father. And everyone's life is just based on their karma. Then if you say karma is everything, then I will conclude that karma is so strong that there is no need for any God. You don't have to exist at all. Why do you have to exist if karma is so strong? And then she again argues. She says, if you say that controller is needed because this material energy is after all inert and it needs a controller, then why did you create those bonds of affection? And these bonds of affection, if they are disturbed by karma, who will raise children affectionately? They will have children, but they will not raise children with a lot of affection. They will just neglect all their children. So you have created such a horrible world where there is affection, there is karma, and in spite of all this, children are dying before their father. So what kind of god are you? You're very, very unintelligent. So she shows her anger and she blames God. Then what did she do? She decided, oh, why am I simply gossiping with this God? Waste of time. He's not going to respond. He's not going to bring my child back to life. So I will directly talk to my child. So she started bargaining with her child because she thought, no, you're showing anger at this God. And she started shaking her child and she said, oh, child, I'm very helpless. I'm very aggrieved. You should not give up my company. Look at your lamenting father. We are all so helpless. After so long, we had a child and now you're going to go away to hell, to the darkest regions. Don't go with this Yamaraj. He's a merciless person. You stay back with me. And she keeps telling, my child, you slept for such a long time. So please get up. Look, all your playmates are calling you to play. You'll be very hungry. Come, I'll give you milk and I will dissipate all the grief that you have. So like this, she was trying to wake up the child, but that was also of no avail. Then was depression. They all started crying so badly. In fact, it is mentioned that Chitraketu, Kritadyuti, the entire kingdom with all its citizens were crying so much and they were on the verge of death in separation from this child. And at that time, the two sages, Angira and Narada, come to enlighten them. And then Narada Muni, of course, like he always does, he gives knowledge to King Chitraketu. And Chitraketu is somewhat enlightened. However, we don't see that Kritadyuti became enlightened after Narada's instructions, right? And the child then, by Narada Muni's mercy, he makes the child speak. Some say that he, by his mystic power, he made the child itself speak. Some say that Narada Muni spoke through the child. Now, when this little child started speaking, nice, very high philosophy, that is when Kritadyuti and the rest of the Kovais, and of course the Kovais were not really lamenting, but Kritadyuti and the citizens and all of them were really awakened. So the child said, who are you? Why are you lamenting? Whose father are you and whose son am I? Right? So he goes on giving instructions that all these relationships, they are very, very temporary, just like money transaction. If I have a $10 with me, what is the point of being attached to that particular $10? I will use that $10 and probably go and buy something for Thanksgiving, and that $10 will go to Walmart. From Walmart, it is going to go to Kroger, and from Kroger, it is going to go to somebody else's hand. Do I have attachment to that $10? Attachment to that $10 is meaningless, right? Other analogies given in Bhagavatam are like sticks floating in a stream. If you see lots of sticks floating in the river Ganges, after a certain point in time, it may appear that initially these sticks are together. After some time, they get separated, right? That is the nature of this world. Or sand under one's feet. Supposing we go to the beach and we go barefooted and we come out. At that time, there are a lot of sand particles sticking to the sole of our feet. But as we continue to walk, these sand particles are going to get dispersed with time. These sand particles are never going to be together all the time. Think about people who meet in a restaurant or a place to eat food or drink water. Maybe 100 people gather at one time, but are these 100 people going to be there together all the time? It is not possible, right? That is the nature of the world. All relationships are temporary. In this birth, the child was explaining all this. The child was telling, in this birth, maybe you are my mother, this person is my father, but I am the spirit soul. Our relationship is not always permanent. So when they heard this wonderful discourse by the child, Chitraketu and Kritadyuti, they cut off all their shackles for affection, and they understood this is all because of bodily relationship. And they decided to finish off the final rites for the child and they gave up their attachment. Okay. In this case, here in this particular verse, the wives of Suyagnya, they were also lamenting. They were also in the same situation. But Yamaraj came and spoke to them in the form of a boy. And just like how Angira and Narada enlightened Kritadyuti, similarly, Yamaraj was also able to enlighten all these wives. So let's take one more case. We saw the case of Suyagnya's wives. They were lamenting very pitiably. Next, we saw the case of Kritadyuti. It took some time for Kritadyuti to come to realization, and she was enlightened only after the child started speaking. In the fourth canto, there is a story, a very famous allegorical story of Puranjana. You all know that story, right? The story of Puranjana. Is my voice clear? I am getting a lot of static. So just
good, Mataji. Very nice. We can hear nicely.
Okay. So in the fourth canto, there is a story, very famous allegorical story of Puranjana. In that, this Puranjana, he was enjoying with his wife Puranjani in this city of nine gates. You all know that story. But eventually, what happened? He died. Old age took over. Jara, you remember Jara comes and then old age takes over. And he dies and he takes next birth. When he takes his next birth, he takes the body of a woman because he was very attached to his wife. In his next birth, he becomes Vaidarbhi. That is the birth that he takes. It's the birth of a woman. And as Vaidarbhi, she gets married to a great devotee by the name Malayadvaja Pandya. When Vaidarbhi and Malayadvaja were in the forest during their last period of their life, this Malayadvaja, he died in the forest. And Vaidarbhi was left alone. So when Vaidarbhi was left alone in the forest, it was very scary for her. She was in great anxiety. She saw that her husband departed. She touched the feet of her husband and she could understand that it had become cold. So she understood, oh, this is a symptom of death. And she tried to wake up her husband. She cried. She cried profusely. She was lamenting. She cried. And then she decided to perform the final rites for her husband, dilating the fire and cremating him. And she was also ready to perish herself. She was ready to perform sati. But then at that time, an old friend, it is mentioned, Bhagavatam says, an old friend in the guise of a Brahman arrived there. Now, who is this old friend? This old friend is the Paramatma, right? So the Paramatma appears there, just like how a small boy appeared as Yamaraj there. In the case of Suyajna, then in the case of Kritadyuti, the small child woke up and spoke. Like that here, there is one more person coming to say, who is the Paramatma. The Paramatma himself comes and he begins to, in the form of a Brahmana, and he begins to speak to this lady, Vaidarbhi. He says, oh, lady, who are you? Whose wife or daughter are you? Who is this man who is lying here? It appears that you are lamenting for this dead body. Do you even recognize who I am? I am indeed your eternal friend. You may remember that many times I have appeared in the past and you have consulted me. That is our state too. We are continuously consulting with the Paramatma all the time. Consciously, unconsciously, the Paramatma has stayed with us all the time. And the Paramatma is our eternal friend. Instead of looking at the Paramatma, we are just lamenting for and wasting our time in one sense. There is nothing wrong in grieving for a departed, but lamentation to the point of losing oneself is condemned in Shastra. So the Paramatma comes and tells, hey, what are you doing, Vaidarbhi? Do you even remember who I am? And Prabhupada very beautifully explains in the purport that when a relative dies, there is some sort of renunciation that is automatically seen. Actually, in the case of Vaidarbhi, she was able to look at the Paramatma when the Paramatma called her. When the Paramatma came as a Brahman, she was able to give her ear to him. Why? There was some sort of renunciation. She was not ignoring his advice. So Prabhupada says, when one's relatives die, there is some sort of renunciation that is automatically visible. What kind of renunciation? The tendency of a human being is, we are also fed up of life. We are thinking, what sort of life is this? Everybody is dying. Even I don't want to live. I don't want to live without my loved one. But then Prabhupada points out that consultation with the super soul who's seated in the heart is possible only when one is completely free of contamination and material attachment. If you have too much material attachment, you will not consult with the Paramatma. But one who is sincere and free from contamination, who is pure, he will get an opportunity to consult with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is sitting as the Paramatma, waiting for everybody in his heart. And this Paramatma is always called as the Chaitya Guru. And who is the external representation of the Chaitya Guru? It is our spiritual master. who is ready to give us instructions. So our spiritual master is so compassionate, he's present in front of us, in embodied, right? He's present as a person in front of us to give us instruction. We may not be so great that we constantly talk to the Paramatma, but then our spiritual master is so compassionate that he's present in front of us and he's ready to give us instructions and solutions. And Brahman, in the case of Vaidarbhi, who's actually the Paramatma, he tells Vaidarbhi, actually, you're not the daughter of Vidarbha, nor are you the wife of this man, Malayadvaja, nor are you actually Puranjani, in the Puranjana or Puranjana who married Puranjani in your previous birth. You're actually simply captivated by this body of nine gates. This bodily identification happens only because of Maya, my illusory potency. But actually, both of us are spiritual identities. You are also Jiva. I am also the Paramatma, of course. But both are spiritual. The Jiva is also spiritual. Paramatma is also spiritual. And we are like two swans who live in the heart. When one swan is instructed by the other, he becomes situated in his constitutional position. This means that the other swan who is hearing will regain his original Krishna conscious position and this material attraction will be diminished. So like this, by the advice of the Brahmana / Paramatma, this Vaidarbhi was reinstated in her constitutional position. So we see a gradual difference between these characters. Think of the wives of Suyajna versus the wife like Ritadyuti of Chitraketu, and now we see the lady Vaidarbhi. Vaidarbhi was a little more advanced, right? She was able to listen to the super soul. But then there is one personality in Bhagavatam who was so much more advanced, and she was Queen Archi, who lost her husband Prithu Maharaj. Of course, Archi and Prithu Maharaj, both of them are representations of Vishnu and Lakshmi. But still, we'll see their story. How Archi responded to a situation. So again, Queen Archi and Prithu Maharaj, they were in the forest in their last days. And it was time for King Prithu to leave the world. So at that time, Bhagavatam explains, this is 4:23:21. Specifically, the verse says, Alakshya kinchincha vilapya sasati. Vilapya means lamentation, right? So what happened? She lamented kinchit, little bit. Lamentation happens, yes, but not to the point that it sucks out one's own existence or one's own time. That is what later in the same lines in this particular series, we will see that Yamaraj tells the story of two birds. How in separation of one bird, the other bird was lamenting way too far and that bird's life also ended. We will see that story, so I won't get into details. So you should feel bad, but not to a point of giving up yourself or not to the point of losing oneself. So let's see what happened in the case of Queen Archi. When Queen Archi saw that her husband Prithu, who had been so merciful to her and also Mother Earth, no longer showed symptoms of life, she lamented for a little while and then built a fiery fire on top of the hill and placed the body of her husband on it. Prabhupada, what does he say in the purport? After seeing all the life symptoms of her husband stop, Queen lamented for a little while. Kinchit means for a little while. The queen was completely aware that her husband, who was spirit, was not dead. Although the symptoms of life, which is action, intelligence, and sense perception, had ceased. As Bhagavad Gita says, Dehinosmin yata dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tata dehantara prapti dhira tatra namukhyate. A dhiraha will not lament for the change. As embodied soul continuously passes from this body, in this body, from boyhood to youth to old age, in this body itself, there are so much changes. So are we looking at our 5-year-old photograph and crying every day, or looking at our 15-year-old photograph and crying? No, change is normal. Our body is changing, then why are you lamenting when the soul is moving on to a fresh body, nice brand new body? A realized person, a dhira, will not be bewildered by such a change. So when a living entity transfers from one body to another, the process is generally known as death. And a sane man, Prabhupada's words, he doesn't say dhira and all, he says a sane man. If you have some sense, you will not be sitting and lamenting. For he knows that this living entity is not dead. The jiva per se is not dead. But it is simply transferred from one body to another. So the Prabhupada, he thinks about the queen. He just gives you a glimpse of what could have happened to Archie. He says, the queen should have been afraid. She was in the forest living alone with her husband. She should have been afraid of being alone in the forest with the body of her husband. People are very scared of bodies, right? Preta. You think, are you Preta Sharir? We don't want to be with a Preta. So she should have been very, very afraid of being alone in the forest with the body of her husband. But since she was the great wife of a great personality, she lamented kinship for a little while, but immediately understood that she had so many duties to perform. Thus, instead of wasting her time and lamentation, she immediately prepared a fiery pyre on top of the hill and placed the body of her husband to be burned. So she understood she had duties to perform. This is what even Krishna and Arjuna in the second chapter, in the beginning of the second chapter, a similar conversation comes. Actually, life goes on for everyone. Lamenting for the death of our dear ones must not waste our time, because this life is a rare opportunity for us to attain perfection. Human form of life, atato brahma jignyasa. We have attained this human form of life after so many births, right? So we should have some sense of responsibility to utilize this, and we should also perfect our lives, just like how the person before us has perfected his life and moved on. So we should feel bad, but we should focus on the goal of human life, which is meant for performing bhakti and attaining the Supreme Lord. So in the Bhagavad Gita, I wanted to tell this, how beautifully Krishna and Arjuna speak. It is so enlightening. Second chapter, beginning of second chapter. Krishna, after he accepts Arjuna as a disciple, when Arjuna says karpanya dosha tahata svabhava and all that, and he surrenders and to Krishna as a disciple, at that time the first thing Krishna does is he starts scolding Arjuna. He says ashochayanan vashocha swam prajnyam vadam cha bhashase. You're talking like a wise man, but wise do not lament for the living or dead. Prajnyam vadham cha bhashase. Gatasun agatasun cha nanu shochanti panditaha. A pandita will not lament for the living or dead. And after he scolds Arjuna like this, he says, actually, all individuals, we have all existed eternally. Never was a time when I was not there, or you were not there, or the kings before us have not been existing. Nor is there going to be a time when we are going to cease to exist. Natva evam jatunasham natvanevi janadipa, that verse he says. And he says, we are all going to exist. There is no question of the soul dying. At that time, Arjun may argue, although the soul is eternal, the soul, when it comes in contact with the body, it becomes an object of affection. Correct? So we are not really affectionate to the soul per se, unless and until it comes in contact with the body with which we relate to. Unless this person, that soul per se, is my husband or my child or my father, I'm not going to have an affection. This my comes from a sense of bodily understanding only. Right? So unless the soul comes in contact with a body, it doesn't become an object of affection. So for that, Arjuna says, I will still lament. So what if the soul has an eternal property of always being there? I am lamenting because this soul came to this body and I am attached to this person in that body. So I will lament. So for that, Krishna says, no, no, it's not like that. Just like how you are not lamenting for your boyhood or youth, Dehinosmin, he says this verse. Dehinosmin yata dehe kaumaram yavanam jara. Dhirat tatrana muhyate. A sober person will not lament for such changes. It is just a change. The soul is just moving on, so don't lament. But then Arjuna may argue that I'm still attached to this current body. This soul in this current body. That is my problem. That is my attachment. Let the soul transfer, but I am attached only to this body. So that is when Krishna finally says that you should tolerate such situations and execute your duties. Yamhina vyatayanti eti purusham purushas shabha kamadukka sukham dinam somratatvaya kalpate, he says these words. The only solution is to tolerate. Tam titikshatva bharata. Actually, he says matra spashastu kaunteya. Matra spashastu kaunteya. Shitoshna sukha dukkada. He says that verse that just like how a person has to tolerate changing seasons, similarly, he has to tolerate that separation. There is no other goal. You have to tolerate and not just tolerate and keep quiet. Tolerate and execute your duties following your dharma. That is when you execute your duties, you will come to the platform of knowledge, and from knowledge, liberation will be attained. Yam hina vyatayanti ete purusham purushasthava samadukka sukandiram somratatvaya kalpate. Such a person is eligible for liberation. So what did Krishna tell? You tolerate, come to the platform of knowledge, then you become eligible for liberation. All these things have to be there. There is no solution to change in this world. It is all going to happen. But what is in our hands? Tolerance. So we have to accept and tolerate, be tolerant. And how do we do that? We are not Mayavadis to relinquish our emotions, right? We don't have to completely give up affection, family dealings. We are not like that. We all have emotions and we are nice devotees. We cannot suddenly become hard-hearted. It is not possible. The only solution to tolerate nicely is, of course, you have the knowledge of the Shastras. But at the same time, it is very important to surrender to Krishna and have faith that Krishna will protect. When you have that faith, rakshishyati iti vishvasaha, when you have that complete faith, Krishna will protect, Krishna will take care, and he will equip us with the necessary strength. That is Krishna's magic. Just like, actually, life is not a bed of roses, right? This is a common saying, life is not a bed of roses. In fact, life is a bed of pebbles, not even bed, a road of pebbles, pebbles and sharp stones. But then what can protect you from these sharp stones and pebbles when you're walking on a road barefooted? It is a nice cushioned shoe, right? If you wear a nice cushioned shoe, then when you're traversing through these different harsh roads, you will not be affected. Not be affected means, yes, you can feel something is irregular under your feet, but you will not feel that pain when you're wearing a nice cushioned shoe. This nice cushion that is given when you're traversing through these roads full of pebbles and stones is nothing but the knowledge of Shastra, the guidance of Guru, and mercy of Krishna. So by the mercy of Krishna, guidance of Guru, and knowledge of Shastra, one's consciousness is transformed to a point that he will be able to tolerate. So oftentimes, my Guru Maharaj says, it is not possible to change the circumstances around you, but you can choose to respond. You can change the way you choose to respond to such circumstances. Our response can be changed when we take guidance from Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So reversals will come without rehearsals. Nobody is given a chance to rehearse before a reversal comes. But with the mercy of Krishna, all these can be tolerated and we can respond nicely to these situations. So now we have spoken so much about grieving relatives. What a grieving relative to do, what these wives could have done or what they should be doing. Eventually, they'll also be enlightened. Okay. It's only a phase. Even the wives of Suyajna are going to be enlightened and they are going to cremate their husband's body. And we saw different characters from Bhagavatam who responded in a similar way to an extent, but then they had guidance from a person and eventually they woke up to the right consciousness. Now let's shift gears and let's see about a person who's leaving the body. As much as relatives are grieving, it is very difficult, according to this verse, it was very difficult for King Suyajna to leave and go, to move on. He was hovering as a ghost, right? We all have attachment to this body. So let's see what what can be done for a person to develop strength and not be too attached to the body. Attachment to the body is actually very, very natural. Why? Because we have resided in this body and we have been residing in bodies for such a long time. We have taken different births, and as the soul is encased in one particular body, there is a lot of attachment. We think that we are the body. That is natural. It is very difficult to give up. It is extremely hard. In fact, Shukadev Goswami, he tells Parikshit Maharaj during the Brahma Vimohan Leela, Shukadev Goswami says something very interesting to Parikshit. He says, the living entity is actually most attached to one's own self. All the outward paraphernalia like home, family, friends, country, society, wealth, opulence, all of this is only secondary in pleasing the living entity. They please the living entity only because it is bringing pleasure to the self. So for this reason, a person is always self-centered. We are only first thinking about ourselves. First it is us, then it is the body, and then it is the relatives like wife, children and friends. So that is why when there is an immediate danger to one person, first he takes care of himself, then only he takes care of others. So that is natural. And in fact, that is also recommended in one sense. Like when you fly in the airplane, they tell you if there is a lack of oxygen, what should you do? First, you take the mask and put it to yourself. Then you help people around you. That is what they tell you, right? So the general understanding is that a person loves himself most. That's why we say this person is selfish, self-centered. Actually, everybody is selfish and self-centered. That is the nature. They're all very worried about ourselves. The next object of affection is probably the body, and after that, it is our extended family, extended body, which is our children, our husband, everyone. And day and night, we are just working to give pleasure to ourselves. Why is this happening? Why is this attachment so hard? Because the I, the spirit soul, is within the body. So the focus is on the spirit soul and the region where the spirit soul exists. The spirit soul and the body is the first for a person. It is always, you know, we say, oh, I'm so concerned about the other person. Yes, that concern will be there only after we take care of ourselves. It is natural. It is not abnormal. Everybody has that problem. But then as a person is advanced further, he knows that the spirit soul is pleasing only because it is a part and parcel of Krishna. Why is the spirit soul so attractive? Why are we attached to this body and the soul? Why are we attached to ourselves? That is the question. The reason we are very attached to ourselves is because we think it is very attractive. It is very nice. It is good. It's a good feeling. But then as we advance, as we are taught by our spiritual masters, as we take guidance from Shastra, we understand that actually this spirit soul is a part and parcel of Krishna, and it is pleasing only because Krishna is pleasing. He is the all attractive. So when we understand this, that we are nothing but an expansion of Krishna, that is why we are attractive. Expansion meaning, of course, we are part and parcel, independent, separated part and parcel, not his incarnation or something. We are a separated part and parcel. In one sense, an expansion is Tatastha Shakti. That is the reason we are attractive. So when we take shelter of Krishna and Krishna becomes everything for us, Krishna is the most attractive. This part and parcel is a tiny attraction. And the body of the part and parcel is another small attraction. But when we take shelter of Krishna and understand Krishna is everything, then he becomes everything. Then there is a shift of focus. And liberation for such a person is already there. This is what Shukadev Goswami explains to Parikshit Maharaj. When Parikshit Maharaj asks this question, why is it that all the Brajavasis got more attracted to Krishna when Krishna became the cowherd and the cows and the calves after the Brahma Vimohan Leela? Everybody was only, they were more attracted to that particular boy, that particular son who was Krishna during that 1 year. You all know the story of Brahma Vimohan Leela, right? Krishna expanded himself as all the cows and the cowherd and everybody. So that entire year, everyone was very attracted only to the one who was Krishna, rather than Even if these cows had new babies after this boy was living with them also, in spite of that, they were having attraction, their full attraction only to Krishna. Because Krishna is the source of all the attraction. So what we understand from this is, if we shift our consciousness, if we are able to understand that Krishna is the source of all attraction, Krishna is number one in our life, then Krishna becomes the center of attraction. And slowly the center of attraction is moved. For us, we are the center of attraction. That shift happens when our focus is transferred towards Krishna. So this is the explanation given by Shukadeva Goswami. Now, if a person is still attached, okay, it is normal. And he's still hovering like in a ghostly body, then what do? That is the next question. So Prabhupada, in the purport of 4.18.17, he tells us what we should do. See, if that person has not developed sufficient Krishna consciousness, if he is not able to move on to a next body, if he is still taken a ghostly body, then how do you help that person? So this is very nice. Prabhupada says in purport of 4.18, this section is when Prithu Maharaj is Prithu Maharaj is milking different living and the earth, and the earth is giving different gifts, right? Different people, they come as the milkman and they come as the calf, and then there's a suitable pot, and then different things are taken out of earth. At that time, when they talk about the pitras, at that time this word Prabhupada writes here. In Bhagavad Gita 9.25, it is said, Pitrin yanti pitruvrataha. Those who are interested in family welfare, we are called as pitruvrataha. There is a planet called as Pitraloka, and the predominating deity of the planet is Aryama. You must have heard about this. He is somewhat of a demigod, and by satisfying him, one can help ghostly family members develop a gross body. That is why, when we offer pinda, right? We offer pinda for departed soul. Many people ask us a question. So if my relative has moved on to a next body, who is actually accepting this pinda? Who is going to take this and who is going to be benefited? It is actually this class of demigods called as Pitris, headed by Aryama, who accept it and they distribute it to the departed souls, helping these departed souls to gain another body. That is what is happening. Sometimes we start arguing, we start telling, oh, all this process is all imaginary. We don't have to follow all this. No, we should follow, Prabhupada says. So he says, those who are very sinful and attached to their family, house, village or country do not receive a gross body made of material elements, but they remain in a subtle body composed of mind, ego and intelligence. And those who live in such subtle bodies are called as ghosts. This ghostly position is very, very painful because the ghost has intelligence, it has a mind, it has ego, and it wants to enjoy the material life. But because it doesn't have a gross body, it can only create disturbance because it wants some material satisfaction. So it is the very duty of family members, especially the son, to offer oblations to the demigod Aryama or to Vishnu. Generally, we do it to Vishnu. Of course, Aryama is like a bodily part of Vishnu. He's a demigod who accepts on behalf of Vishnu. But Vishnu is the actual the one who accepts and delivers. So from time immemorial, in India, the son of a dead man goes to Gaya at a Vishnu temple and offers oblations for the benefit of his ghostly father. So it is not that everybody's father will become a ghost, but the oblations of pinda are offered to the lotus feet of Vishnu so that a family member who happens to become a ghost will be favored with a gross body. But however, Prabhupada also tells this is for the benefit of everyone. He says, if one is habituated to eating prasadam all the time, then what happens? Prasadam of Lord Vishnu, there is no chance of becoming a ghost. Where is the chance of becoming a ghost? It's a simple formula. All your life, if you have eaten Vishnu Prasadam, then where is the chance of you getting a birth that is lesser than a human being? In fact, 99% of them will be liberated. But even if they are not liberated, what will happen? We might at least get the birth of a human being and we'll be able to practice devotional service. So in Vedic civilization, that's why the Shraddha food is offered with faith and devotion. And if one offers these oblations with faith and devotion, either to the lotus feet of Vishnu through the representative, I mean, they will offer it to Vishnu through the representative Aryama, who is the representative of Pitraloka, then whoever has departed, they will attain proper bodies and be relieved from their ghostly condition. So, in contrast to the king, Suyajna, who was hovering there, who was attached to his body, there is one particular character in Srimad Bhagavatam who teaches us how you should be detached from the body. So this is one thing I would like to point out. Bhagavatam has answers to everything. Bhagavatam has given a case study of everybody, every possible situation, a good situation, bad situation, whatever it may be, you will have at least 10 examples of different people telling you what to do. So in the ninth canto, there is a story of King Nini. When Shukadev Goswami begins to discuss the story of the Chandra Vamsha kings, that time he brings about the story of Nini Maharaj. Ninth canto, chapter 13, discusses the story of Nini. So when Nini gave up his body, the sages who were present there in his kingdom, they did not want Nini to leave. They wanted to preserve his body with various oils and balms so that they thought that eventually they can pray to the demigods and they can revive Nini. Because they thought Nini is a very good king and they didn't want to lose him. See, so contrasting. In the story of Vena, the Brahmanas and the sages, they chanted curses and they wanted to kill Vena by the chanting of mantras. They didn't want that king. But when Nimi was there, they wanted that king. And they wanted to preserve Nimi's body. There also Vena's body was preserved. But they didn't want Vena to come back to that body. They wanted to churn that body and take out Bahuka, and then they took out Prithu Maharaj. But in the case of Nimi, they wanted that Nimi itself to come back. So, in 9th canto, 13th chapter, this scene is described, where the sages are trying to preserve the body and they are asking the demigod, "Oh demigod, if you so desire, if you are favorable towards us because you have great power, please bring back Nimi's soul and ask him to reside in this body." So at that time, you know what Nimi's response was? 9:13:8, he says, let's see. The first stages say, "If you are satisfied with the sacrifice and if you are actually able to do so, kindly bring Maharaj Nini back into this body." The demigods, they said yes to this request by the stages. But Maharaj Nini, what did he do? He said, "Please do not imprison me again in a material body." Maharaj Nini continues, "Mayavadis generally want freedom from accepting a material body because this material body is an inconvenience. And eventually, even if they accept a material body, they have to give it up. So they are in fear of giving it up again. But devotees whose intelligence is always fixed in the service of the Lord are not afraid. In fact, they take advantage of rendering devotional service in this body. We are not against this body. We want to utilize this body. We want to utilize it in devotional service." Nimi is telling, "I don't wish to accept a material body because this material body is a source of all distress, lamentation and fear. Just like how a fish, you know, in a big ocean is always living in anxiety because of fear of death." Okay. So he says, "I don't want to take this body again because I want to move on. I want a spiritual body. I don't want this material body. I understand that this material body is meant for performing devotional service. But now I think the tenure is over. I've performed devotional service, the tenure is over. Now all that I desire is a spiritual body. So don't force me to come back and take this material body." That is when the demigods say, "Okay, let Nimi live without a material body. Let him live in a spiritual body as a personal associate of the Supreme Lord according to his desire." So like that, Nimi Maharaj, he says, "I don't want to come back. If it was one of us, we would have said, okay, I'm so attached to this body, I'll come back." But Nimi said, "No, let me live in a spiritual body. Give me that boon if you want to give me a boon." So the underlying point, I'll finish. I know I just have 1 minute left. Today is also the appearance of, sorry, the disappearance of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. He was a great Paramahamsa who taught by his own life and how you should not live with attachment to your body. We see many stories of how he was completely detached and he was always focused in Krishna consciousness. So the point is, by performing different limbs of devotional service like chanting, hearing, reading scriptures, fasting on Ekadashi, today is Ekadashi, we have nice observances like Bhishma Panchaka. So by doing any of these, one can surely deliver ourselves from material conditions and we can perfect our lives. This is the only solution both for a dying person as well as for a person who is lamenting. Only Krishna consciousness is the only solution. I'll say one particular incident. Today is Ekadashi, right? So there is a story of one disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur by the name Bhakti Bhudeva Shrauti Maharaj. He was preaching in East India and he would go and he would preach to the elderly people and children in villages. So once after preaching in a program, he asked from the children in the village if there was a place where he could go and spend in the night, he could go and sleep in the night. The children, they sent him to an abandoned house which was haunted. So he entered that isolated home. He didn't know it was haunted. He entered into that house. He put a mat on the floor and he took rest in the night. But at about midnight, suddenly he was awakened by a terrifying voice. That voice said, I'm a Brahma Rakshas and I tend to devour anyone who stays in this house. So I'm going to eat you up, the Brahma Rakshas said. So when this Maharaj, he heard this terrifying voice, he was completely undisturbed. He was completely undisturbed. He didn't even get agitated or worried, nothing. So, and he was very knowledgeable as well. He was a great devotee. So all that he did was, he took some water and he sprinkled it in the direction of the ghost. And he dedicated all the results he had obtained, all the benefits he had obtained by observing Ekadashi to that ghost. Okay, he sprinkled water towards that ghost and said, I give all the results. Whatever secondary benefit has come by observing this Ekadashi, let it come to you. And immediately the Brahma Rakshas was blessed and he was delivered. He thanks this Maharaj and he says, I'm so relieved. Now I'm delivered from this ghostly body and he leaves. So this is the power of doing any limb of devotional service. Prabhupada, you all know, he's given so many stories in different places. Like I remember one particular thing, this was mentioned in when he was doing a business in Lucknow. There was a ghost haunted house and Prabhupada acquired that house for very few dollars. And the simple solution to drive away the ghost was chant Hare Krishna. He various chanted Hare Krishna and the ghost went away. Later, even in London, there was one house that they had acquired. And Prabhupada gave the same advice to all his disciples to chant Hare Krishna so that all these ghosts could be delivered. Gita Mahatmya has so many stories of different people in the past who have been delivered just because they read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Ghosts have been delivered. So many, like chapter 3, the story of chapter 3, which we will not go through because we don't have time. So you can look it up and you can read the story and see how just by chanting the holy names, reading Shastra, reading Bhagavad Gita, hearing from a sadhu, Bhagavad Gita Mahatmya, that story is there, right? There's Dunduli and Gokarna. Gokarna reads the Bhagavatam and that ghost is delivered. So many stories are there. So we just have to, the solution is very simple. We have to take shelter of all these different resources that is given to us. So Krishna's lotus feet is like a boat. When we are all stuck in this ocean of samsara, there are these huge waves of time and small bubbles are like the different relationships we have. We have this relationship of husband, wife, children. All these are small bubbles in that ocean. They will appear and they will disappear. But there is one thing that can rescue you from drowning in this ocean. What is that? It is the boat of Krishna's lotus feet. If you catch hold of that boat of Krishna's lotus feet, you will surely be rescued. And this bhava samsara that is so big, that ocean will become very small, like a footprint of a calf. You will cross over it and you will catch Krishna's lotus feet very tightly and he will take you back to Godhead. So these are some thoughts and some instances from Srimad Bhagavatam I wanted to discuss. I know there is no time for questions and Prabhuji must be here already. Is Prabhuji here, Mataji? Sorry, I took 5 more minutes.
No, Mataji, he's not joined yet.
Okay. Any questions or do you want to hear more stories?
Thank you, Mataji, for your wonderful, wonderful, such a beautiful narration, stories from all different places, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Thank you, Mataji. It explains a lot. It helps a lot. So, Mataji, one quick question. So the devotees that are practicing, actually we are trying to practice. I don't know if you're practicing. We are trying to practice, Mataji, and trying to be detached from this body. And we are hoping we will go straight to Godhead. So in the transitory time, like it's very easy to say that we don't have any desires. We might think we don't have any desires, but who knows, maybe so much in subconscious level, we have so many desires. So when, let's say a practicing or neophyte devotee leaves a body, yeah, and does not end up in Golok Dham because he thinks that he's not here. And there is a pull between the material desires and the spiritual desires. And so what happens in the transitory phase? I mean, is it in a ghostly mode because the, or is it in a higher planetary system? Where would they reside at that phase?
Bhagavad Gita says they will either take birth in advanced devotees' families or in families of rich people who have their basic comforts covered.
And Mataji, is there a time, like, is there an immediate birth or they have to hang out sometime a little bit and then get the body? I mean, to complete all their, maybe go through some kind of cleansing process or?
They have to, Mataji. So, If you're getting liberated, Vishnu Dutas will come and you will go back. Or Yamadutas will come. Maybe you have some sins, you just pay for it. If needed, live in a heavenly planet. If not needed, you will get birth immediately. So there is no fixed rule. It is case by case. So, but it takes a little, well, not much, but you will go through that quick cycle and you'll take
that. Thank you, Mataji, for all the hope. Janavi Mataji, I see your hand is raised. Would you like to go ahead and ask your question, Mata?
So I had a question. It's not about the lecture you gave, but so they say pure devotees, they can see Krishna everywhere. But in Shastashtakam prayers, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's feeling separation from Krishna, but he can see Krishna everywhere. So why is he feeling separation?
Oh my God, this is such a deep question. How will I answer this question? Thank you for thinking so hard. Yes. Hard to answer. Okay. So just like, you know, the story of Radharani, right? What happened Radharani when that Madhu, there's a story. You know that story, Janavi? When Madhu Mangal tells that, oh, Madhu left. There was a bee that came. There was a bee that came and then it was disturbing Radha and Krishna. So Madhu Mangal drove away the bee and then the bee went away and Madhu Mangal said, oh, now Madhusudan has gone. So immediately Radharani, though she was next to Krishna, she started lamenting, thinking Krishna has left me and gone, and she gets very anxious. That is the nature of a devotee. That is an emotion that they feel. Similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, though he is Krishna himself in the mood of Radharani, he's constantly seeing Krishna in his heart all the time. He always felt a sense of separation. He was worried, will I get separated from Krishna? Will I get separated from Krishna? Like that. Excessive love creates a lot of anxiety. And this is spiritual love. Like the story of Radharani. Do you remember that story, Janavi?
No.
That's what they are. They are in so much love for Krishna that even in union, they are feeling separation. That help. Thank you,
Janavi, for your fantastic question. Anita Mataji, would you like to go ahead and ask your question, Mata?
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you so much for allowing me to ask questions. And Hare Krishna, Preeti Vilasini, Mataji, a very wonderful class. We wanted association again every monthly, at least 2 or 3 times. Please come, Mataji. Mataji, my question is, Prabhuji has joined. 2 minutes, Mataji. My question is like about the ghost you were saying. When a person dies after his lifetime has ended, will he also become a ghost, Mataji?
Not everybody, Prabhupada says, no? Not that everybody becomes. Sometimes there is a possibility because of attachment.
Okay, so in that case, if his future body will be predicted, or it will take time for that person also?
If a person is going back to Godhead?
No, whose lifetime is finished.
His future body is
predicted. Maybe he is a devotee or a non-devotee, whoever it is. After his lifetime is finished, if he goes, if he dies, then his next body will be predicted once he leaves his body, or it will take time for him also. And until then, will he be as a ghost?
At the time of leaving, the prediction itself happens. Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram. Right? So, at the time of leaving, the consciousness in which he leaves predicts his future body. Right? Or, okay. And what will you think at the time of leaving? What you have been doing all your life? Or what you're most attached to all your life? That will govern your last thoughts. Your last thoughts will create the next
one. Okay. So, Mataji. Okay, fine. I have further, so I will ask you personally again.
Thank you.
Mataji, there are so many comments about your fantastic class, awesome class. Everybody is paying obeisances to you, Mataji. I don't know if there is any room to take any more questions, or should we hand over the...
Mataji, Prabhuji has joined now, so we have to go for prakrama.
Yes.
Thank you, dear devotee.
So much, Mataji. We will end the class here.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Mataji, Vanchakapati, Vijapatita Nam Pavani, Vishnu, Vishnu, Padiki, Jay, Ananta Koti Vaishnavi, Jay.
Her Grace, Preeti Vilasini Mataji ki Jay.
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 Mataji. Okay.